Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. It seems like over the weekend, all kinds of news tends to break, and that's certainly the case with today. As a matter of fact, we're going to talk about a host of issues in the course of the next hour or so. But first, a review of the news. And a major tsunami warning was issued with a quake that hit the Indonesian island of Sumatra. But it now looks like that there will be no major tsunami. That's good news. Just look back to December 26, 2004. And remember the awesome and unexpected carnage that took place with that enormous disaster of a tsunami that was occasioned by, caused by an earthquake on the floor of the Indian Ocean. Now this was a quake that was centered near Sumatra. It was 8.7 on the Richter scale. That's a huge earthquake. It has already killed dozens of people and destroyed some villages. But it looks like the great concern about a repeat of the great tsunami is not going to take place. We should be thankful for that, even as relief and disaster efforts are now underway in the island of Sumatra, and we'll be tracking this story along with you as well. Of course, much news having to do with the Terry Schiavo situation that goes back to the Nancy Cruzan decision in 1990, and it's hauntingly similar. What we're looking at here is the law working out as if nothing has changed over the last 15 years. And in the case of Terry Schiavo, we now have a woman who is in her last hours, according to some reports. She is wasting away. She is being starved and dehydrated. By the way, have you noticed how there are people who are out there in the news now saying that that's scare language? You shouldn't be talking about her being starved to death. Reports in the Los Angeles Times, reports from the New York Times arguing that she really is in a very peaceful state and all the rest. Why are all these medical doctors out trying to say that this is peaceful? And what is so offensive about using the word starvation? Let's face the reality here. Her feeding tube has been removed. She has no nourishment. She's receiving no hydration. So however you want to put it, she's being starved to death. Now, there are those who say, you know, that's just kind of scare language because she doesn't have the perception. How do we know what perception she has? That is one of the most amazing claims I have seen repeatedly put forth in all the controversy over Terry Schiavo. People who are telling us exactly what she perceives and does not perceive. You know, as a matter of fact, she hasn't had the kind of testing over the last decade that would even tell us that. As if medical testing is able to tell us exactly what someone is subjectively feeling or experiencing. You know, I find this another case of America trying to look away, to avert its glance, and to refuse to face the fact of what's going on here. And this is going to continue until we call it to a halt and until we deal with it straight up. And what we've been facing, not only in the courts, but in the court of public opinion over the last couple of days has been a travesty. Over the last couple of weeks, but especially over this past weekend, we've seen people who are trying to deny the obvious. And even as they are doing so, this woman is lying in a bed in a hospice in Pinellas Park, Florida, and her life is ebbing away. We're facing here a court-mandated end of life. A court-mandated, well, murder's not the right word legally, but it is certainly a killing. This woman is not on a ventilator. Her brain is functioning in terms of the fact she's not brain dead. She's in a state of minimal consciousness. It's debated over what exactly that state is. But are we now, as Americans, ready to say that persons who are lacking an adequate level of consciousness are just unworthy of life? I want to talk about several specific issues related to this, but I want to go to yesterday's program on Meet the Press. Some amazing statements made by Connecticut Senator Joseph Lieberman, who you will remember from the year 2000, was the Democratic vice presidential nominee. He said a couple of things I think we need to hear, and quite frankly, I was just encouraged to hear this Democratic senator speaking this way. First, let's listen to him.
I've been saying this in speeches to students about why getting involved in government is so important. I always say the law is where we define the beginning of life and the end of life. And that's exactly what was going on here. And I think as a matter of law, if you go particularly to the 14th Amendment, can't be denied due process, have your life or liberty taken without due process of law, that though the Congress's involvement here was awkward, unconventional, it was justified to give this woman more than her parents or husband the opportunity for one more chance before her life was terminated by an act which was sanctioned by a court, by the state.
Now, that's a really important statement because, after all, we're seeing a backlash or criticism against Congress, especially the Republican leadership in the House and in the Senate, and against the President of the United States for supposedly interfering in a state matter. Well, folks, that's nonsense. The federal courts interfere all the time when it comes to death penalty cases because Americans have a constitutional right to equal protection under the law and to due process of law. And the federal courts routinely, customarily, almost automatically take death penalty appeals and consider them very carefully. What is different in this case? Why is it all of a sudden an intrusion? It's interesting how people who are opposed to the death penalty all of a sudden now say, it's wrong for the courts to intervene here when they would certainly count on the federal courts to make certain that death penalty cases have been adjudicated correctly. Joseph Lieberman is a man, he's an interesting man. Of course, he is an Orthodox Jew by his own conviction. And he is someone who is not easily labeled politically. But he had something else to say. I want you to hear a further comment he made on yesterday's Meet the Press.
These are very difficult decisions. But, and of course, if you asked me what I would do if I was the Florida legislature, any state legislature, I'd say that if somebody doesn't have a living will and the next of kin disagree on whether the person should be kept alive, or that is whether food and water should be taken away and her life ended, that really the benefit of the doubt ought to be given a life, and the person, the family member who wants to sustain her life ought to have that right, because the judge really doesn't know, though he heard the facts, one judge, what Terry Schiavo wanted. He made a best guess based on the evidence before him. That's not enough when you're talking about aggressively removing food and water to end someone's life.
Well, hats off to Senator Lieberman. He's exactly right here. And as a matter of fact, I think if any good thing can come out of this, it's going to be a reconsideration of the law. I'm just tired of hearing over and over again, well, the courts have ruled, the courts have ruled. Well, guess what? The courts have ruled on the basis of precedents that were established by other courts and by an activist judiciary that is now imposing itself in every dimension of life, including matters of life and death. In this litigious society, it's just inevitable, I guess, that we end up with these issues in the courts. But the courts need to be informed by changes in the law. As a matter of fact, what Senator Lieberman is talking about here is picking up some steam, and from some unlikely sources in the House. Representative Barney Frank of Massachusetts, a homosexual advocate who understands that the homosexual community is facing many end-of-life decisions with the AIDS crisis. You also have Senator Tom Harkin, a liberal Democrat, who is also supportive of this kind of legislation because he is an advocate for the disabled. You have a coalescence of an interesting little coalition here, only it's not little. It better not be little. We need a law that will change the reality as it is now faced by the courts so that they will give any person in this situation a hearing before a federal court, so that a federal court would consider whether equal protection under the law has been afforded this citizen, whether due process rights have been afforded this citizen. And we need a law that says where relatives are in fundamental disagreement over the continuation of medical treatment, the prejudice ought to go to those who want to continue the treatment rather than to those who want to end the life. And that would be a remarkable change in the law. And if any case has demonstrated to us the absolute categorical need for such a legal change, it is the case of Terry Schiavo. And we had better not miss this lesson. We had better look at it, face this reality honestly, and then move on to make the changes in the law that are necessary. By the way, one other issue I just have to bring up about this. Have you noticed how this has become an opportunity for Christian bashing? Let me just give you two examples. First of all, in the Financial Times over the weekend, an editorial, "Praise God but Defend Secularism." We'll go figure that title. But listen to this. Take the Schiavo case. It raises a host of constitutional and legal issues about the relationship between the U.S. Federation and the states, or whether legislators are being hijacked by litigators. Listen to this. But what is particularly repellent about this case is the way one side wants to use it to emote publicly and with bug-eyed religiosity about the sanctity of life. Did you hear that? How one side wants to use it to emote publicly and with bug-eyed religiosity about the sanctity of life. Guys, they hate this. The secular world hates being told that human existence is not some kind of biological, materialistic, naturalistic accident. And guess what? You can't talk about the dignity of human life without, as Christians, talking about what it means to be made in the image of God. Is that bug-eyed religiosity? Well, if so, editors of the Financial Times, get used to it. This kind of anti-Christian animus has no place in this society, and quite frankly, this is an editorial for which this newspaper ought to be embarrassed. When we come back, we're going to give you another example of this kind of anti-Christian bias that is all of a sudden coming out. And, you know, a case like this becomes a flashpoint for illuminating larger issues, larger problems and controversies in the society. And we're certainly facing that now. When we come back, we're going to talk about a review of issues ranging from what has happened to Easter, Resurrection Day. Did you know that in Great Britain, less than half of the people surveyed indicated they even knew what it was about? And we're going to be talking about this new report about the United Nations, an eye-opening report about corruption that goes all the way to the top, that raises a host of questions about who really does contend for human rights, and frankly, what should we expect of an organization that is supposed to unite all the nations? Today we're going to talk about a host of issues because the news is full, and it's time to talk. Give me a call, 877-893-8255. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Well, the Financial Times calls those of us who are contending for the dignity of Terri Schiavo's life, those who give themselves to, quote, bug-eyed religiosity about the sanctity of life. Now, what kind of condescension is this? I mean, the Financial Times is an economic newspaper, but they dare to go into this and they say, praise God, but defend secularism. Well, this is really a frightening picture of what the cultural elite is like, certainly those that are reflected in the editorial writers for the Financial Times, but they're not alone. Let me just go to the New York Times. An article published March 24 by John Schwartz and Denise Grady. It's about William P. Cheshire, Jr. That's the Florida neurologist at the Mayo Clinic that Florida Governor Jeb Bush cited when he made the attempt to have Terri Schiavo transferred to the custody of the Florida State Department of Children and Families. Now, let me just quote to you the kind of animus that's found in here. And I'm shocked, by the way, that this is not just what is being quoted in the article, but these reporters are using this kind of language. Let me just read you the first sentence out of this article. William P. Cheshire, Jr., the Florida doctor cited by Governor Jeb Bush yesterday in his announcement that he would intervene again in the case of Terri Schiavo, listen to these words, is a neurologist and bioethicist whose life and work have been guided by his religious beliefs, end quote. Well, okay, what is everyone else's life and work guided by? You know, this goes back to an article I published just last week about ethicist Gilbert Mylander. You know, he's dealing with the fact that there are those, I guess, including these reporters, who think that there are some people who are just neutral. They're just ethically neutral. They're not committed to anything, so they're just objective and neutral. Ladies and gentlemen, there is no neutrality. You either believe that human beings are made in the image of God or not. You either believe that human life is sacred or not. There is no neutrality, and everyone is driven by deep religious convictions, even if those are pagan, secular religious convictions. They're still convictions. Everybody has a worldview. Nobody just works like some kind of moral robot. But that's not the worst here. They cite Dr. Arthur Kaplan, director of the Center for Bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania. When he was asked about Dr. Cheshire, he replied, "Who?" And that supposedly means that if Arthur Kaplan doesn't know you, you're nobody. Listen to this. Dr. Ronald Cranford, a neurologist and medical ethicist at the University of Minnesota Medical School, who has examined Ms. Schiavo on behalf of the Florida courts and declared her to be irredeemably brain damaged, said, quote, "I have no idea who this Cheshire is." Listen to these words. He has to be bogus. A pro-life fanatic. He has to be bogus. In other words, if you disagree with me, and by the way, there are many doctors who disagree with these doctors, you're bogus. A pro-life fanatic. So if you're a Christian medical doctor now, just understand what you're up against. You're up against a secular establishment, and if you disagree with them, you are all of a sudden a pro-life, bogus fanatic. That from the New York Times on March 24, 2005. You know, one of the interesting things about all this is, have you noticed that no one is really saying that we ought to take this to the United Nations or to an International Court of Human Rights? Have you noticed that Americans just simply do not look to the United Nations to save us from all this? You know, there's so many important things to talk about, but I don't want to let today pass without mentioning front page stories in several newspapers around the world, including the Wall Street Journal today, about the panel that is going to criticize Kofi Annan for lapses in the United Nations Oil for Food program. And this looks like the corruption goes all the way to the top, including the fact that Kofi Annan's son, Kojo, was receiving hundreds of thousands of dollars of money and from one of the businesses with which the UN was conducting this oil for food program. This is just an example of the kind of corruption that goes all the way to the top. And I just want to use this as an example to say, as an opportunity to say, the last thing we need is to broaden these issues and compromise American rights and American courts in the world of international opinion. Who are you going to trust here? This kind of ridiculousness and corruption? Well, I think with a Christian doctrine of sin and with our understanding of the necessity of a limited government, we need to understand that the United Nations really can't be fixed. I mean, it may be minimized so that it does the least damage possible, but there's simply no way that it can fulfill the kind of utopian visions that some people have for it. Before we go to the calls, I also have to tell you just a few things. First of all, about Easter. Resurrection Sunday has just passed. I normally don't call it Easter, but everybody else does, so we're going to acknowledge Easter Sunday. What happened then? Christians around the world gathered to celebrate the resurrection of the Lord Jesus Christ, the fact that he was bodily raised from the dead, the fact that that's central to the Christian gospel. Well, you would think that most people in at least Western nations would understand what that's about, but the Times of London, a major news story published yesterday, that says, according to polls, and by the way, this isn't brand new, this is just following a trend, according to polls in Great Britain, less than half of the citizens of Great Britain understand that there was any historical event tied to either Good Friday or Easter Sunday. We are living in a post-Christian age. We are living in an age in which there are many people who simply have no idea of the Christian gospel. So when people tell you that the West, nations like Germany, France, Belgium, Sweden, Great Britain, and the United States of America are Christian nations, evangelized nations, just look at this kind of confusion. And I think you'll see why. Last, I have to go to Palm Beach County, Florida, where reports are that the malls in that area on the southeast coast of Florida have decided to ban the Easter Bunny because it's an overt Christian symbol. Now, don't get me started on this one. Number one, the bunny is a fertility symbol. It was simply picked up. The Easter Bunny with all of his eggs is not, hear me, emphatically is not a Christian symbol. Is a symbol that some Christians have allowed, is a symbol that for some people, represents spring and all the rest, but the bunny has nothing to do with the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. Nonetheless, he's too offensive and too sectarian for folks at the malls in Palm Beach County. The enlightened owners, according to Mark Gelman, of the Gardens Mall in Palm Beach County, have just expunged the Easter bunny. Instead, they're going to have the garden bunny, who's going to have a little pagan entourage. There will no longer be Easter egg hunts in the mall. They are going to be just egg hunts. According to the Palm Beach Post, this is in order to secularize the holiday. Guess what? The garden bunny has a name. It's Baxter. Baxter, the garden bunny. I'm offended on this for many levels, but at one level, I'm simply offended for my good dog and close friend, Baxter the Beagle. He doesn't like his name being used for the sake of political correctness in a mall in Palm Beach County, Florida. Also, that the mall at Wellington Green, the Easter Bunny, is going to be known, again, as Baxter, and is available for spring solstice photos with children. At the town center in Boca Raton, Peter Rabbit will hand out the goodies, and at the Boynton Beach Mall and the Treasure Coast Square, the Easter Bunny is still there, only those two malls. But the manager of the Boynton Beach Mall was apologetic about not terminating the Easter Bunny. Well, there you go. My in-laws live right down from the mall there at Wellington Green, and little do they know that political correctness has taken over, and now there is the Garden Bunny, Baxter the Bunny. We are facing a cultural breakdown. When the Easter Bunny is too potent a Christian symbol to be allowed in the mall, we are in big trouble. A host of issues to discuss today. We want to talk about what interests you most. Give me a call, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. We're going to talk about Terry Schiavo, all the issues related. It seems like over the weekend we've had an explosion of news issues, all of them worthy of our conversation. We've got callers from around the country who have already called in. There's time for you to call. Make your point. These are issues too important for us to ignore. The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. There's so much nonsense out there. I mean, at times you just look and it's like an avalanche of absolute insanity that's coming at us. We need to talk about it because what we need is more than just an episodic response. We need a cultural strategy for how we're going to confront these issues. And frankly, we need to be culturally aware because Christian truth-telling in this age is a complex and demanding business. It's our business on this program. It's now your business to call. 877-893-8255. We'll be right back. I'm Albert Mohler.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the program. By the way, I'll be on CNN Headline News program, the Nancy Grace show tonight at 8 o'clock to talk about the Terri Schiavo case. And this story continues to confound, to unfold. And I can just hope it will awaken the American conscience. The kind of anti-Christian bigotry we've been talking about here, just reflected in the editorial in the Financial Times, the kind of article that we cited from the New York Times. You know, you're seeing it all over, and just in terms of even editorial cartoons here in our local paper here in Louisville, also in national distribution. The other thing that's interesting about this is foreign response. In the Times of London, in the Telegraph, and in the Guardian, you have editorial columnists talking about some far-right fringe in America who believes in the sanctity of human life. You know, you read that, you begin to wonder for a minute, are they right? Are we at the point where those who believe in the sanctity of human life are just a far-right fringe? Well, I hope not. But some days you begin to wonder. Let's go to Jeff calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Jeff, go right ahead.
Hey, Dr. Mohler, thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I guess you'll have to classify me as a bogus pro-life fanatic.
Well, you can join the crowd, Jeff. Thanks for your call.
I'm proud of it. Hey, I'd just like to get your comments or thoughts on the deafening silence from the stem cell research crowd on the Terri Schiavo case, and how that correlates or relates to where would they be seated on the position if it were someone like Christopher Reeve under the same situation.
Yeah, you know, all these things tie together, don't they, in terms of the sanctity of human life. You start looking at embryo ethics and you realize that's at the beginning of life. And, of course, in Terri Schiavo's case, it's the end of life. And then you mention Christopher Reeve, the late actor, whose case was kind of used as a bridge by the enthusiasts for embryonic stem cell research between beginning of life and end of life issues. Because, after all, they were saying it would be worth whatever is the cost in the destruction of human embryos. There goes the argument. If a treatment could be found that would cure Christopher Reeve, you know, what about the reconstruction of brain matter and all the rest in a case like Terri Schiavo? Yes, I think it is very interesting. And I get your point now, Jeff, that there is a silence on that. You don't hear people saying, look, here's a test case. What if we just had stem cell applications for a case like this? You know, I think what we have here is the continuing divide in which you do have two different parties, two different cultures in America. I don't just mean political parties. You have two different groups, two different worldviews represented. One that believes that human beings are simply a naturalistic accident of an evolutionary process, and thus we should be free to redefine ourselves, to direct our own evolution, as Richard Dawkins suggests, and basically make ourselves in our own image. And then on the other side are those who believe that human life is a gift, that the human life bears dignity because we're made in the image of God, because the Creator has given us, alone of all creatures, the capacity to know Him. And thus human life is sacred from beginning to end, from its natural beginning until its natural conclusion, and must be respected at every stage. And here's the other little statement we have to make, not only at every stage and age, but in every condition. Because the moment you buy into a quality of life ethic, you begin to define humanity away. You begin to discount what it means to be human. And you say, these people are not as human as others. And thus they are, by implication, not as worthy of life. And, you know, how many times do we talk about this on this program? Because we confront this argument again and again and again. It's good to hear from Paul, listening on WFIA-FM. Paul, go right ahead.
Yes, on the way home from work today, I was listening to Rush Limbaugh. For traffic information, I mean, I was listening to 84 WHS for traffic information, and Rush Limbaugh was on, and they were talking about the Terri Schiavo case, and a lady doctor come on, and I don't know if they said her name or not, but they said that she was, Terri Schiavo was being given morphine at this moment to ease her pain, and Rush Limbaugh said, well, if she was being starving to death, that would be a peaceful and calm way. And this doctor said that it was an underhanded way by Terri Schiavo's husband and the doctors to kill her quicker.
Yeah, you know, Paul, that's a very good point and something that ought to really show us the inconsistency of the argument on the other side. I began during the early part of this program citing the fact that there are those doctors who are just claiming that they know what she feels and doesn't feel, they know what she experiences and doesn't experience, and they keep telling you she's not experiencing pain. This is a gentle way to die. This is a peaceful death. And some are even arguing that she lacks any capacity to be aware of the fact that she's now dying of starvation and dehydration. You know, I don't buy that for a minute, but here's the inconsistency. If she can't feel anything, why are they giving her morphine? And I understand they're also administering Tylenol to her. If there is no distress, if there is no discomfort, if there is no pain, then what's the meaning of this? And yes, there are some medical cases at the end of life where morphine is basically used to bring about a death because it suppresses respiration as well. Now, I'm not a medical doctor, and I am not in a position to know exactly what's happening to Terry Schiavo with the administration of morphine in her case. But I can tell you, at the very least, it is a glaring moral and medical inconsistency. Give us a call, 877-893-8255. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. You know, I find us continually confronting issues that arrive, it seems almost out of nowhere. I mean, you open the newspaper, you turn on the television, and hear something new. And with the Terry Schiavo situation, it seems like there's still something new virtually every hour. There's some new moral complexity that comes into this. There's still the basic reality that a woman's being starved to death in Pinellas Park, Florida. But behind that is an enormous issue. And an entire constellation of issues related to the power of the courts, the role of politicians, the dignity of human life, the nature of marriage. You face it. It's just all out there. And eventually we're going to have to deal with this. That's, by the way, why I have written a special four-part series Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week at albertmueller.com and at crosswalk.com. You'll find an extensive commentary. And tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday, I'm actually raising six very significant questions and trying to answer them. On the basis of the Terry Schiavo situation. And so I would commend those to you and love for that to be a basis for further conversation on this program. And let's go to Karen calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Karen, welcome.
Hello.
Go right ahead, Karen.
My question is, does Florida recognize common law marriage? And if so, if he has been with this woman for more than 7 years, does she receive benefits like a normal married person would?
You know, I'm really not sure about that, Karen. I do know that press reports coming out over the weekend indicate that Mr. Schiavo intends to marry this woman after Terry Schiavo's death. And, you know, that's a part of the complexity in this. And one of the questions I raise and deal with in the articles I have coming out over the next 3 days is, what about the spousal preference or the spousal privilege in law? You know, because this really is happening because Michael Schiavo is recognized by the courts as being the one who represents Terry when she cannot speak for herself. And what I'm arguing is, we're clearly in a case where he is not morally credible to speak for her, given the fact he has this relationship with another woman, he has children by this other woman, he has intentions to marry her. There are so many moral complexities and qualifications about his role in this. I think we've got to change the law so that the spousal privilege, which we recognize as being established in both common sense and good moral purpose, isn't unqualified. It isn't unbreakable. Because when we have a spouse like Michael Schiavo, I'm going to argue that spousal privilege simply has to go in favor of Terry Schiavo's right to an adequate representation and a credible moral agent. Thanks for your call, Karen. Let's go to Brian. Brian, welcome to the Albert Mueller Program.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I just have a comment. Maybe you can help me understand this. Why is it if I was to go home and starve my family debt to the point of death, I would probably face jail time and stiff fines, if not worse. And yet we got this poor woman in here in Florida who is practically starving to death, and yet no one seems to think that's a bad thing. We place more value on our pets and animals than we do on this poor woman.
Yeah, you know, Brian, I appreciate your call because you're really pointing at some deep-level moral issues that are just going to have to be confronted in the case of Terry Schiavo. And you're drawing the analogy with an animal. And, of course, you can imagine the ASPCA and the Department of I don't know who from the government would show up to either cite you or probably even give you jail time if you tortured an animal in this way. Of course, the argument's coming back, well, Terry Schiavo is facing death just by the removal of medical treatment, because remember, the courts decided that food and hydration were medical treatment and that she's not feeling anything. Of course, even though they're giving her morphine and Tylenol and all the rest, you know, I'm not buying it, Brian, and neither are you, and I appreciate that. But I want to tell you, here's the deal. The argument about animals comes down to this, that the effective way and the humane, just remember that word humane way, the humane way to deal with this would be to euthanize that pet rather than to starve it to death. And I got to tell you, close around the corner of the Terri Schiavo crisis and tragedy is going to be the fact we're going to have the right to die people come up with saying, wouldn't it be more humane to simply administer a massive dose of morphine or some drug that would have ended her life, Nimbutrol or something that is being used in Europe to end life. And wouldn't that be more humane? Folks, once you begin redefining death and you become an active agent in causing death, it's just a matter of who you're going to kill next. And you'll do it in the name of humanity and in a humane approach. And, you know, the humane society is for animals. The humane society of human beings is speaking up for the defenseless and honoring every single human life, whatever the age, whatever the stage, whatever the condition. Let's go to Joe calling from Gilman, Illinois, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Joe, welcome.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing great, Joe. Glad to hear from you.
I just got a quick little story, if I can get it in with a cell phone. But 11 years ago, our then 27-year-old son fell off of a house he was building. And for the next 3.5 weeks, they said he would die any second. And matter of fact, when I called home, being an over-road driver, they said he wouldn't live till I got home. Well, he made it through that, and he had a feeding tube for, I don't know, the next 3 or 4 months. In 6 months, we took him home. Took him 5 years to get back somewhere near normal. And today, he drives a car. He works for Child Evangelism. He loves the Lord. And he has a small mowing business, lawn mowing business. So I think that, you know, these things can change if they're allowed to.
Yeah, Joe, thanks. Hang on with me here. Don't go. I just hold on. Let's hope your cell phone holds. Let me ask you a question. When you had this horrible situation with your son in terms of the accident and medical authorities gave you this bad news, were they suggesting to you at any point that you should remove the feeding tube because there was no hope?
Oh, no. No. Never. They told us that there was no hope with, you know, because they had all kind of tubes in him, life support, collapsed lungs, and so on. But they never suggested that that we kill him at all. Never.
Well, I got to tell you, Joe, I thank you for your call. I'm so thankful for this word about your son, too. I just thank God for the kind of recovery he's experienced. And you know what? I'm thankful that he had a dad and he had a family who was there to pray for him, to speak for him, and to keep him alive in the hope of this kind of recovery. I'm not a medical doctor. I don't know Terri Schiavo's precise condition. I don't know, you know, whether there's a great deal of hope for her recovery like your son experienced or not. I do know that regardless of any medical hope for recovery, there is no medical or moral justification for removing her feeding tube and hydration and just allowing her to die. Let's go very quickly to Sonia, listening on WTBN in Tampa, Florida, right there at the center of the action where Terri Schiavo lies in Central Florida. Sonia, welcome.
Thank you. My comment is this. I'm appalled that government is listening to a judge and then threatening the people around this county with arrest for going in and trying to help this woman. Isn't that what Hitler did? Didn't he have people executed for going in and trying to do what was right? Isn't that where we are now? I mean, I don't understand how the governor is afraid of a judge.
All right, Sonia, we're going to have to go into a break here, and I'll be back in just a moment. The parallels between what's happening here and the Nazi medical doctors are haunting. I'll be back with some thoughts about that and some final analysis in just a moment. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Folks, there's so much to talk about, and the Terri Schiavo tragedy continues to unfold. Let me just remind you again, I'll be on CNN's headline news program, Nancy Grace, at 8 o'clock to talk about this. And it's because I think it's so important. It's because I think this issue is one that Christians must address, and we must be ready to speak to the sanctity of human life and in defense of human life. And who knows how much time Terri Schiavo has left. But we need to use every moment we can to the maximum in hopes that the conscience of this nation will be pricked, will be quickened, and really will lead to a transformation in law and in culture, an embrace of the culture of life over against the culture of death. But I don't know. I don't know. I'm not a prophet. I don't know where this is going, because I could easily see that there is on the other side momentum building for a right to die movement. You have evidence that the baby boomers who are now approaching retirement and looking at death – as a generation are much more open to this this kind of right to die and death with dignity movement, like you now see in Oregon with physician-assisted suicide, which is just a form of euthanasia, et cetera. Folks, I want to hit one thing hard when I come back, and that is let there be no doubt where we stand about the issue of the removal of Terri Schiavo's feeding tube. But I have to tell you that I think it is reckless to criticize Florida Governor Jeb Bush for failing to take executive action beyond what he has already done, or to criticize President George W. Bush on this. I think the Bush brothers have acquitted themselves well. And I want to speak especially about the Florida governor, because I think Jeb Bush has really been noble and courageous in this. And there are those who say, well, why doesn't he send in the National Guard or something? Folks, we either acknowledge or we will rebel against the rule of law. But if you decide you're going to reject the rule of law, if the governor's going to send in the National Guard, then, folks, we're looking at a civil war of sorts. I mean, that is not where it ends. What's the exit strategy? You know, the fact is that we're, unless you're just willing to launch a revolution against the government of the United States of America, that's what we're facing. And I think it would bring a disrepute upon this entire cause. I think it would set back the cause of trying to recover the culture of life. I think we should expect that our elected officials will do everything possible, and I think Jeb Bush has done what he can do. And, you know, there are those who say he could use executive authority to take Terri Schiavo into custody. Yes, for a matter of hours. But, you know, that's not even really well established and uncontestable in law. I don't think we want to face the Florida National Guard in a conflict with federal authorities. I don't think we can face that. I think that issue was settled back about 1865. And, you know, unless we're going to declare a revolution, we've got to respect the rule of law and work within the rule of law to change the law so that it respects human life. I'll be back tomorrow to talk about what matters. Thanks for joining us today. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows, Dr. Mueller's daily crosswalk commentary, and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.